now, you know, I'm not a cynic or anything, but it feels like on a lot of levels that I get kind of used to the idea of the bad guys winning a lot.
Me too.
I know what you mean.
So it makes me really happy this week that the good guys actually squeezed out a win. I don't know if you've heard this, but by a very slim margin, the New York State Senate and now the governor has signed into law same-sex marriage in the state of New York.
All right.
So we don't normally take explicit political stands on this show. We usually try to avoid most things that aren't dealt with religion. And hey, guess what? This one is. But we as producers, we as a show, and I think unanimously amongst our hosts, we support marriage equality for same-sex couples.
Yes, we do.
Without a doubt.
So you are listening to Ask an Atheist. Our number, 253-584-1480. My name is Mike Gillis, and joining us in the studio this week, Deanna Joy Lyons.
Howdy.
And Kate Farr.
Hey, how you doing?
We are apparently all well. So
awesome.
It seems that we're not all, you know, we're not, I mean, I'd like to say that a lot of people are happy about this, but not everyone is happy about marriage equality in New York City. And amongst those people, surprise, surprise,
the Catholics.
The Catholic Church! Yeah, so it says here, this is from the New York Daily News, religious leaders slammed the state's new gay marriage law on Saturday, vowing to ban politicians who supported the measure from any Catholic church or parochial school events. The city's top Catholic clergy issued a strongly worded statement in the hours after the state Senate voted 33-29 to legalize gay unions. Bishop Nicholas D. Marzio, the Diocese of Brooklyn, called on all Catholic churches and Catholic schools to reject any honor bestowed on them by Governor Cuomo, who played a pivotal role in getting the bill passed. He further asked all pastors and principals to, quote, not invite any state legislature to speak or be present at any parish or school celebration. This is a further erosion of the real standing of marriage, DiMarzio told the Daily News. The state should not be concerned about regulating affection. I believe the passage of same-sex marriage is another nail in the coffin of marriage.
Well, you know, the truth is that marriage does not actually belong to the church. Marriage has existed long before the church ever did. I mean, I did a little bit of research before the show, and I mean, the ancient Greeks and the Romans had marriage. In fact, in Greece, I believe it was Greece, might have been Rome, all you had to do was walk up to your intended spouse and say, hey, you want to start a family? And you were married. That was it. No celebration, no ceremony, no church, no anything. I mean, marriage has existed around the world in many forms. I mean, the Comanches, the Native Americans, the Comanches had a form of marriage. So to say that marriage is solely a spiritual thing would be a fallacy. It'd be wrong. I mean, factually so. And so the state obviously has an interest in marriage in ways that perhaps the church does not. And these people who insist that marriage is theirs, I'm sorry, but you're just off base on that one.
Yeah, the church really hijacked marriage from the rest of society. They said, well, you know, we don't have control of this institution, so let's throw down our own. We'll throw celebrations. We'll have our priests solemnize it. We'll say that it is a gift from God, etc. And there you go.
It seemed to be around about the first century. I believe it was a guy named Bishop Ignatius, that was it, who tried as hard as he could to actually get marriage to be very much a church thing. He was saying that that the people who were not married by the church were just in it for lust.
It seems that there's this weird assumption that marriage has had one exact form, and that this form has been unchanged since the creation of the institution of marriage. This is strictly false. Traditional marriage does not, as the Catholics like this guy do, does not represent anything, the beginning of the institution.
Right.
One, the very idea that you get to choose your spouse is still a minority position around the world.
Wow, I didn't know it was a minority.
That cool. For the most part, for the most of the history, at least even of Western culture, this has been a political institution rather than strictly a religious one. It's religious only to the extent that the church was the state. So they were the one basically signing a legal document. This is largely two families who want a mutual gain from marrying their two families together, and basically doing this contract through children, that you have, you marry your family to another eligible person from another family, and the children sort of kind of weld these two families together.
It's a great alliance.
And it can hardly be said that gay couples won't do this. I mean, there are plenty of adoptions or even artificial inseminations in which gay families are formed, you know, through marriage even. I mean, I grew up in Vermont, and Vermont has gay marriage now, and I know a couple of couples that have their own children. So families will be started by gay marriage. You can't make the argument that they won't.
And existing families will be protected, because there are a lot of people who discovered or came out as gay later in life, and, you know, they had marriages and children with straight spouses before. And those people, many, many people are living with, you know, their partner and their children, whether it's theirs or their partner's kids from previous relationships. And they need the legal protections that marriage provides.
It's funny that they work so hard, and it's only after same-sex couples wanted to share in this legal union that they started scrambling to scream that this was somehow exclusively a religious ceremony.
Right.
They seem to have no problem for centuries when you can have a justice of the peace in a courtroom marry two people with no shades of religion about it at all. They didn't scream when two atheists wanted to get married and have no shred of religion have anything to do with the ceremony or the lives they share afterwards.
Yeah.
So why is it they get so hung up on two boys kissing?
Well, I'm sure that a large part of it has to be the so-called ick factor. Now, personally, I see nothing wrong with two boys kissing, and I myself am a lesbian, so I have no problem with two girls kissing. But a lot of people out there see it, and their first reaction is, ew.
And that ick factor leads them to think that it is somehow wrong or harmful, and they must prevent this from happening.
Now, this is one of the things I think is actually a red herring. I don't really buy into the ick factor as a legitimate answer. I think it's a fake answer that somebody gives as a cover for another answer that's probably closer to what they really believe and the real source of their opposition to gay rights.
Gosh, really? Because I would have thought that the ick factor would be the thing they'd try to cover up, because it lends absolutely no legitimacy to their objection whatsoever.
Well, it's a special nature of the ick factor that I'm talking about, is that there are several things that people find icky. I mean, I find plenty of things icky. I think socks with sandals are icky. I think Juggalos are icky. Those plastic Croc shoes are kind of icky.
Yeah.
There are plenty of things. Fanny packs.
Ooh, yes.
However, I'm not trying to ban any of these things, and I think if you talk to somebody who was also opposed to same-sex marriage and used the ick factor, they wouldn't want to ban those things either. So why is homosexuality somehow treated differently than all of the other things that you find disgusting? I mean, why does it have that special privilege?
Exactly. I don't think the ick factor is a valid excuse either, and even if it was valid, even if ick is a good thing to base, you know, legislating other people's lives on, it's still wrong to do that. It's not control. You're controlling other people's behavior for no good reason.
Well, sure. I mean, the ick factor will have no effect on you whatsoever, other than having to live with the fact that it exists. I mean, you can't say, I find that icky and I'm not involved directly at all, therefore I have to stop it. I mean, that's just not legit.
Yeah, if you think it's icky and you don't want to do it, don't do it. But don't go trying to stop other people.
If you're one of those people who thinks that this is icky and that icky is enough to make something illegal, please give us a call. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So that's what I find so funny about this, is that nobody plays the ick factor to ban anything else. I've actually created a number of angry people who've sent in emails because I've said this about furries. If you don't know what furries are and you want to have this burned into your brain, you can use the wonderful thing called Google, and then you can use hydrogen peroxide on your eyes after you've done this. I know that there's probably going to be a time maybe where this furries are considered a protected class, and that I will be the I don't know, the Strom Thurmond of furries, but yet I'm not going to try to ban them.
Okay, to be fair, I do have a number of friends who are furries, and
some of your best friends are furries?
Well, you know, the thing is, they're completely harmless. I mean, I admit, you know, I'm one to talk, but I find it a little odd. But even so, it's so harmless. It really is.
I think that's what comes down
to do.
Yeah, if whatever makes you happy. I don't have to necessarily like or respect the things that you find fun.
Right.
But I'm not going to try to ban them. And I guess, I think Kate really put her thumb on it, which is that is the metric for determining if you find something that should be banned or not. Can you prove demonstrable harm?
Exactly.
And yeah.
Can we find any of that at all among these Catholic clergy screaming at them? And I think the thing that scares the hell out of me are these guys' priorities. I mean, we're in a bad economy, and we're talking about a church that has the doctrine that's saying you're supposed to give all your crap away to the poor. And when it really comes down to it, these guys are forgetting all of that, living in palaces, dressing like they live at Hogwarts, and basically saying that the biggest problem in our society right now is same-sex couples.
Well, and when you think about it, I mean, a lot of church garb, they look like they're in drag. I mean, come on, the Pope wears a dress.
I tend to like his little red cowboy hat that looks like Mike TV from Willy Wonka wears. I keep expecting him to wear a little belt with a cap gun with that. But yeah, the really good example of this sort of skewed priorities of the Catholic Church is, remember the D.C. Archdiocese just a couple of years ago?
Right.
The D.C. City Council said that they wanted to ban same-sex, or they wanted to pass same-sex marriage. They would legalize unions, loving unions, legal unions between same-sex couples. And the Catholic Archdiocese, which was actually having a contract with the city to provide health care and other services to the poor, threatened to pull that contract, bend the entire thing, and say, we're going to hurt the poor because we'd like you to hurt gay people, that we want you to deny that right to other people. So they're actually cutting their ties. They threatened to cut their ties, and thankfully the D.C. City Council called their bluff on this.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. We're going to harm people that we're helping by taking away our services if you legalize something we don't like. That's awful.
How can that be viewed as anything but bigotry? And even, well, I don't want to say tyranny, but it's close.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they are willing to toss a certain population that they proclaim to care about, they say they care, that they will throw them under the bus and say, you know what, actually, we don't care about you enough that we're going to use you as basically a tool, a lever.
A bargaining chip
to go after another population we don't like. We're holding you hostage to our own bigotry. And Kate, that is the absolute right word for it. And let's be honest now about the Catholic Church. Any organization that deals with the problems of pedophiles in your midst by protecting child molesters from the law and shuffling off to find new victims, you are not an organization that has any right whatsoever. You have forfeited the right to get morally indignant about anything.
Especially something that does no harm whatsoever to anybody. I mean, seriously, I don't know how homosexuality can hurt anyone who isn't directly involved in it and anyone who hasn't consented to it. I just don't see how that's possible.
And it's not harmful to the people who are involved in it either, except for when it comes to the bigotry of the society in general. When you are gay and everybody is discriminating against you and saying horrible things about you and trying to deny you legal protections, that's harmful. But that's not coming from homosexuality. That problem is rooted in bigotry.
Hey, we've got a phone call coming in. Somebody with a oddly oxymoronic name, Dr. Homeopathy, calling for us from Olympia, Washington. Doctor, how are you doing? Welcome to Ask an Atheist.
It's good to hear you guys talking about the victory. One thing that you haven't touched on yet, being a room chock full of atheists, is how the suppression of homosexuality represents a reach towards trying to reinforce the status quo, which is what religious institutions need to do to survive.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that.
Absolutely.
Oh, sure. Although, I'm not even sure if it's the status quo they want. I think they want us to move backward.
I would say so, for sure.
I think there's something definitely to that, especially when the status quo for the longest time is that they had the power to kill people. I think if there's been this ongoing movement for freedom, democracy, call it whatever you want, it's always been taking the power of the church away from them, so their ability to hurt people, whether it's to lock them up, like, say, Galileo, to kill them outright, like we're talking the Inquisitions. Yeah. A lot of this stuff still happens in the Middle East. People are executed for bogus crimes like witchcraft.
Oh, yeah, there's a reason they call things like this a witch hunt.
Yeah, it's really insane. And actually, if you look at it, isn't just that, ooh, you know, Islam is from Mars and Christianity is from Venus. Is a really, you look at the context that we're talking about here. We're talking about a place where if you take away the constitutional protections, you take away the culture that says, no, you're not allowed to do that, and you go to a place like Uganda, Christianity there looks much the same way that you're going to see Islam look in the Middle East.
Yeah, and when you're in power and you can enforce your standards, quote unquote, on the rest of the population, you end up reinforcing bigotry. In Uganda, especially right now, I mean, it's a dangerous place to be gay.
Yeah, and then the notion of codifying bigotry into a country's, I hate to say the word manifesto, but their constitution or whatever it is that governs them, you know, that is something that should scare anybody.
Absolutely.
I think what it comes down to is that you can use your religion to limit your own behavior. If you don't like marrying gay people, don't marry one. If you don't want to eat pork, don't eat it. However, you don't have the right to push that on the rest of us. Your religion is yours. We're going to make those choices for ourselves. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll get back to you after these breaks.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And we are back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And it is Pride Week. And I think people are a little happier in New York now that they have legalized same-sex marriage. So I bet you're asking this, why are atheists talking about this so much? Why is it that whenever there's a battle over same-sex marriage or gay rights, why do atheists have so much to say about that?
I think first and foremost, a big part of it is that we as atheists are not fond of religion. We don't make any secret of that. And a big part of what religion is doing in America these days is trying to oppose gay marriage. So, that's a big issue for us. I also think another part of it is that atheists do tend to have pretty diverse groups, not as diverse as we would like, of course. We're all still working toward that. But there are gay people in our atheist groups, and we want to extend to them the same rights and protections as everybody else has, because they are our friends, our family members, and we definitely care about that. And to another extent, I think we often identify with the discrimination gay people face. Now, I'm not going to go making any kind of like, all right, we have it worse or you have it worse. It's not a competition, but we identify with, society as a whole has a lot of misconceptions about gay people and misconceptions about atheists. Religious people often spend a lot of time criticizing gay people and criticizing atheists.
And their reasons, I think, for me, are a large part of why I object. I mean, obviously, like I say, I'm also a lesbian as well as an atheist, so I get it from both sides. But their justification for their position tends to be rooted in things that are unprovable. I mean, they cannot prove their God exists. They cannot prove that their book is true. And yet they want to impose the rules in those books on the rest of us. And so when they tell me that I can't get married or that I'm a bad person for not being a heterosexual, well, I say to them, why? And the reasons they give are found wanting.
Absolutely. You know, one thing you hear a lot from people who oppose gay marriage is they say, I don't hate gay people, but God doesn't like gay people and doesn't like the you know, they often refer to it as a behavior or a lifestyle choice, where we know that's not true either.
That sounds suspiciously like passing the buck, that, oh, that's not me, that's all God. I don't have to own up to the things I'm saying.
Sure, and I can tell you right now, I did not choose my sexuality. Don't get me wrong, I like it quite a bit. But I didn't choose it. It was not a conscious decision by any stretch of the imagination at all.
Absolutely. And as a bisexual, I still haven't made any choices.
Well, if I want sex, I have to buy it. Does that make me a bisexual?
Very possibly.
And on that note, we actually have a phone call coming in. Ed from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Ed, you have something to say about New York?
Yeah, you know, I just think it's just wonderful. I mean, I praise Governor Cuomo for that. And, you know, me too. I mean, I'm not gay, and it's certainly, it's not a lifestyle choice. It's just something you're born with. But my goodness, it's a great thing. I just love the idea, too, that people of both sexes or all sexes or whatever are just saying, thank goodness that now their lifestyle is being given some dignity and some recognition. And I just think it's wonderful. And you guys were also talking about the point, too, where a lot of opprobrium was hurled at those folks because of biblical passages, you know, that had nothing to do with the real world. So you guys are dead on this issue.
Well, thank you, Ed. I'd say that a lot of things in the Bible have nothing to do with
real
world.
Oh, yeah. No, but on this particular issue at this time, I mean, I just think it's terrific that maybe one more dark curtain is being tossed away and, you know, people are allowed to live the lives that they want to live and so on. And as citizens, paying citizens, you know, they're afforded all these other rights. Why not give this one to them, too?
Absolutely. Do you guys think that we're hitting a turning point on this issue?
I think so. I mean, now there are 6 states, if I've got my count correct, that have gay marriage. And then civil unions are also in other states, some. And, you know, it's a great step in the right direction.
Yeah.
We still have a long way to go because there are a lot of places where people can't still be openly gay. There are places where people are discriminated against on a regular basis, and they don't even have protection from, you know, anti-discrimination laws. So there's, you know, this battle is by far not over.
And on top of that, it does seem as though the public opinion is turning as the generations march on. Younger and younger people are introduced to the notion that it's okay to be gay. And so I think that right now we're seeing a minor turning point, but in the future, people are going to be like, why was this ever an issue at all?
Exactly. And, you know, I was just reading some Pew data. The latest polling was, I think, 2010. And when you break out people who are in favor of gay marriage, it is overwhelmingly, you look at the age, people who are 18 to 34, it was like 66% are good with gay marriage. And then it goes down as you go up the age range. And as the population, the older populations die off and the younger generations are born who are in favor of gay marriage, it's just going to keep getting better. But we do still have a lot of work ahead of us.
So, Ed, I notice you live in Portland, Oregon, which, like, you know, kind of the area up here is fairly liberal. Has that been in your experience down there? Has it been sort of corresponding with the age versus how much
absolutely.
They support?
Absolutely. No, you know, I talk to young people and old people, too, and I evaluate folks, and, you know, some people I evaluate are, you know, they're trapped in this whole thing, too, where they're gay kids and they just, or adults, and they just can't help themselves. And the idea that that their lifestyle is so tough on them, it just really irritates me. But I agree with you utterly. I think as we old farts like me march off into the sunset, the younger kids are going to be much and more embracing and inclusive of this stuff.
But
we don't,
I
have
don't
to
want you to march off in the sunset.
I wouldn't mind if a number of people managed, not violently, but
you're
if
right.
you know they could march off, you know, peacefully in their sleep.
There we go.
Or, Or never vote again, never raise their voice again, maybe enjoy themselves in their minds ever more, but not affect people in a bad way. I agree utterly with you.
Well, the truth is, I mean, they seem to think that it's very much their business, even though it doesn't affect them in the least. And I think that's an attitude that we have to discourage.
That's a real question. I'd like to ask both of you and Ed as well, what are the reasons that people give where they can say this affects them at all?
From my perspective, it's crazy that it can't. But I mean, even if we don't like the mechanics involved in certain forms of
sexual congress,
I mean, so what? That's not my business. It's like the two people that go up to the zoo and two ladies, and they ask the zookeeper, is that a male rhino or a female rhino? And the zookeeper says, madam, they should only be of interest to another rhino. But, I mean, I don't care what they do. And as long as they don't scare children or make horses afraid in the streets, who cares what they do?
Absolutely. I think that's a good way of looking at it. Thank you, Ed.
One thing that Ed mentioned, a word he used, was dignity. And I think that's also a very important word. I mean, for a very long time, homosexuals have been treated as pariah. And I think that is also starting to change. One thing about that is, I mean, okay, for those of you who don't know, I also have a YouTube channel called Bionic Dance, all one word, and I will discuss issues with theists all the time. And when they can't win against my arguments, when the logic and reason and evidence just gets the better of them, often they will fall back on trying to insult me. And one of the words that they will use is dyke. Now, I call myself that. That's one of those words that we've taken back, kind of like the N-word for black people. We call ourselves dykes. It's called the dyke scene. It's just a word. So when they try to use it to hurt me, it's like, so? I mean, really, did you think that was going to work? It's a very strange thing, but they try to do it.
This is something I've kind of noticed. I've noticed that atheists, despite that there is a stigma against us, we're still the least popular group as far as, potential presidential candidates,
right,
or who you want your kid to marry. But my question is this, is that every group that's been oppressed in one way or another has a magic word, an N-word or an F-word, something that when somebody utters that, there's an expectation of retaliation in some way. Why is it that atheists don't have a word like that?
We do have a word. Atheist.
Well, but it's not a pejorative. It's not derogatory.
It's true.
I mean,
it's just descriptive.
When you brought this up the other day to me, I asked my Facebook friends about it, and everyone had their own favorite word that they like to call themselves, like heretic or infidel, or even just smart, some people said, And I was like, okay, great, but I am actually looking for that derogatory word, that N-word for atheist, and we don't have one.
I mean, it has to be a word that hurts. I mean, that's the thing, is that it can't just be, hey, we embrace things like, hey, we're a bunch of godless heathen baby eaters or whatever.
Right.
It's got to be something that hurts us and that somebody goes, oh, I can't believe they just said that.
Yeah, and I can't think of anything that someone could call me that would do that.
We have another phone call. Look, Henry from San Jose has something to say to us. Henry, welcome to Ask an Atheist.
Hey, guys. Great show. One of the things I wanted to bring up was the fact that one of the things that got the New York law passed was the fact that this time they included religious exemptions into the law. So there's two specific things. One is that there's a clause that says that a minister can't be penalized for refusing to perform a marriage or to allow a marriage to take place in his church. And then there's another clause that says that there's nothing about the law which changes the discrimination law in New York. So in other words, a church could choose to not recognize a couple's marriage, like in hiring or something like that, and they can't be sued for it. So that is the only, in my mind, the only argument that ever had any merit was this fear that a religious institution might end up being sued as a result of a law like this, and the New York law specifically prohibits that, or it makes it much harder for houses of worship or clergymen to suffer as a result of this law. So basically, I don't know what their complaint could possibly be at this point, other than, their the ick factor, like you guys were talking about before. They're legally protected from this law hurting them in any way.
Yeah, Henry, I'd heard this before, but I think in a weird sort of way that this amendment that we're putting in there, this that largely has to do with politics. It doesn't really have much to do with reality. This is a way to win those extra votes from people who might get yelled at by constituents. In the end, these sorts of protections are already inherent in the First Amendment.
Yes.
That the only way that you can put any sort of, I guess you could say, rider on the legal non-discrimination rights of a church would be that if it's taking federal or state money in some way, that's the way you can say, okay, you can either discriminate or you can take state taxpayer money, but you can't do both. I can see that, but in a weird sort of way, I think that you're right in the way that it's necessary to pass it, but I don't think it's necessary to get those protections.
Oh, perhaps not. Yeah. What I can tell you, though, from my personal position is that I don't actually care. I don't give a flying fornication about the church's version of marriage. I don't care at all. All I want are the legal protections, the right to file joint tax returns, the joint custody laws, the hospital visitation rights, inheritance rights, all of those things. I mean, that's really what matters. The church can laugh at me as much as they want and say I don't have a real marriage. I don't care. And if I want a religious marriage, I can find some schism church that is totally gay-friendly and get that religious marriage. All I care about really, though, are those legal protections. So if the church, you know, has their own ideas, hey, let them.
Exactly.
I think you're right. I mean, that the point of including it is to disable that argument, you know, to say, okay, there is no justifiable basis for you to fear this law because of some phantom legal, some lawsuit or some phantom legal, criminal trouble you might imagine you could face in the future, because we're putting it in the law that nothing is going to about this is going to affect you. So that's why, you know, even this argument, which I, in my opinion, is the only one that had any even potential merit, is nullified by adding these to the law. And I think that's, I mean, part of the reason why I bring it up is that I think this kind of thing is going to be a good precedent for the future, because I imagine a lot of states that pursue this in the future will probably include these exemptions just as a way of having that same political advantage in the future. And I think it's going to help us atheists, because we're going to be following in the gay rights movement's footsteps in the future. You know, we don't have this particular issue, but for example, we have the issue of in order to officiate at a wedding, basically you have to be you're automatically granted the right to officiate at a wedding if you're a clergyman or if you're an elected official, but if you're just like a humanist, meeting leader, or you're the president of an atheist group or whatever, you don't have the same rights granted to you. And so inevitably, we will probably be fighting things like that, discrimination like that in the future. And this sort of thing will lay down a good, pathway for us to succeed in the future ourselves when we come up with our legal battles.
Yeah, Greta Christina actually wrote a really great article about the similarities between the atheist visibility movement and the LGBT movements. But there are things also that are different. And like you remarked on, in the with the atheist movement, a lot of it is about visibility to combat discrimination and misconceptions about atheists. And that is something actually that we learned, and we even, we borrow language from the movement. We say we come out of the closet. But we don't have as many rights that we need to win. And I think that's an important difference, because there are certain things, a few, like officiating at a wedding, or certain states you can't actually be an elected official. You can't be a senator or whatever if you don't profess a belief in God. So there are some of those, but I do think that we have a little less work to do thanks to the path that's been blazed.
Hey, thank you for your call, Henry. I think that's it. There's a lot of truth in that. The one thing that I think is kind of interesting about this being potentially the litmus test for a up in the air senator voting for this or not, or
right,
is that it doesn't seem to be good enough for the Catholic Church. Is that this church talking about making somebody who voted for this measure, persona non grata, is with that measure in place, with that amendment in place, saying that they can't be discriminated. It's not good enough that their religious freedom is protected, just that their religious beliefs have to be enforced on other people.
Well, I mean, it's sort of part and parcel of their religion that their God gave this world to them, that it belongs to them. I'm sure that's a large part of the problem, is that we're not conforming to their expectations, and so they're pointing the finger at us and saying, hey, you know, you gotta fall in line.
All right, we're going to take one last phone call before we go to a break. We are going to talk to Matthew from Ireland. Hey, Matthew, welcome to Ask an Atheist.
Hello. Hi. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. What have you got for us today?
Yeah, I would like to raise an issue. Well, I'm calling from Ireland, but I'm originally from Malta. I don't know where if you know, it's in the Mediterranean Sea. It's a very small country with a population of 400,000, roughly. But unfortunately, with regards to civil liberty, we're a bit way back. And I was my question is, and I would like to partake in a small discussion, if I may, as to like, because our country's state religion is the Roman Catholic religion. It's in the Constitution, so the Church pretty much has a say-so into what goes
comes. The same can be said for Malta, isn't that not true? Malta's
yeah,
also
is
very
Malta.
Catholic.
It's Catholic on the outside, but there's quite a few, you would say, closet atheists and open humanists more and more coming out, you know, and say, look, enough is enough. Recently, we had a referendum. It was a non-binding referendum to try to bring in divorce. It's pretty, and the church was all out with its big guns, you know, visiting, having priests visit elderly homes and telling them, if you vote yes for divorce, you will go to hell. This is the Catholic Church. It's not some evangelical church in the Bible Belt. I was wondering what your input is on that.
Catholic Church using the soft sell, it seems.
Even worse, saying out loud that any Catholic who votes in favor of divorce is neither worthy of being called a good Christian or of being a loyal citizen.
Because
the heads of state in Malta love referring to Catholic citizens as if, you know, everyone's Catholic, when quite a few portion of the population are not Catholic, you know.
Yeah, that's why separation of church and state and a secular society is a good thing, because right there you've got the Catholic Church telling everybody how to vote. I mean, there are churches in America, there are evangelical organizations that actually do get involved politically, and that they're not punished for, and they should be, because it's not legal. They're not supposed to advocate for anything politically.
Well, and hold on to their tax exemption. They can choose between the two. The problem is they want to have both their cake and eat it, too.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, let me just say that I'm actually with the Jedi on this one. May divorce be with you.
So,
I love that one. Yeah. Thanks. And one more thing. You were referring to homosexuality. Homosexuality is... Even worse, you know how since the Catholic Church is part, in essence, literally part of the state, so education, even state schools, the religious studies that they teach is pretty much the doctrine of the church, and they specifically teach people as young as 8 that homosexuality is abnormal. Like, they don't say it out loud, like, say, for example, the Westboro say, oh, listen, you know, God hates, you know, facts. They just say in a soft way. Imagine, you know, that's instilling homophobia from childhood. And, we have established a humanist association, but the big challenge is how to, you know, as Thomas Jefferson said, to build up that wall.
Absolutely. Thank you for your call, Matthew.
Well,
Kate?
One thing that we have not actually touched on at all is the origin of homosexuality, the reason for it. I mean, Matthew brought up that it's thought of as abnormal by some people, but for all we know, it may be some sort of safety valve against overpopulation. I mean, I don't know what the origin of homosexuality actually is. I'm sure it's like some sort of hormone I don't want to say imbalance, but a difference in hormone levels in the womb or something.
A natural variation.
Exactly. But there's nothing unnatural about it. It's entirely a natural function. I mean, you know, to point to it and say this is bad, this is something that should not exist, that does not necessarily hold true.
Yeah, when you see it among over 400 species at this point, species that predated the human beings on this planet, the whole it's a choice, it's a lifestyle, kind of fall flat on its face. Again, you're listening to Ask an Atheist. Our phone number is 253-584-1480. We're going to come back to you after this break.
Better to help those people feeling the wrath than an atheist. We don't believe in God, so we're pretty sure we won't get raptured out of here.
You can help by donating to Rapture Relief.
We'll use the money to help those afflicted during Armageddon.
And if for some reason this all turns out to be just another failed prophecy, your money won't be wasted.
We'll give it to Camp Quest, which teaches children critical thinking and science so they won't be duped by religious fables in the first place.
Learn more at rapture-relief.org.
A satirical benefit for Camp Quest, brought to you by Seattle Atheists.
Join us after today's show at the Office Bar and Grill in downtown Tacoma. Offering a wide selection of tap and bottled beer, a full bar of your favorite liquor, and a taste bud tantalizing menu, come on down and shoot the breeze with the Ask an Atheist crew. Who can argue with your motives? After all, you're at the office. The Office Bar and Grill is at 813 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
And we are back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 584-1480, in the wonderful little area code of 253. And we are talking about homosexuality.
Oh, no.
And the people who get so worked up on it that they feel the need to push their religious beliefs on other people and codify them into law. So this is always the big question. They throw out that it's a choice. What if it was a choice?
Who cares? Exactly. I'm going to credit this argument to our very own Sam Mulvey, because he is the one who I think put it the best when I first heard it. And so I tell it to everybody, even if it were a choice, who cares? It doesn't harm anybody. There's no reason to oppose it. So there's absolutely no harm in it. So if it's a choice, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get worked up about people's musical preferences. I mean, okay, maybe we don't want them inflicted directly upon us. But, you know, if you want to listen to your own music, go right ahead.
That's a great analogy for it.
And yeah, you can't force religious musical tastes on other people. You can't. I mean, of course, we're thinking of the like 80s movie Footloose. Essentially, what you're doing is, yes, you can listen to nothing but Barry Manilow, but you can't ban everything but Barry Manilow.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't want to live in a world where I had certain people's music forced upon me and I wasn't allowed to listen to what I liked. I mean, imagine going through life that miserable, because I, you know, my parents don't necessarily listen to the kind of music I like, and I endured that for how long? And now here I am getting to listen to my own stuff. If I didn't have that opportunity, I would hate life. And if I didn't have the opportunity to have the sex life, the love life, the home life, the married life that I want as a lesbian, well, then, you know, what's the point in, well, I mean, okay, I can find other points to live, but still, it would be less, and I wouldn't enjoy it. And who benefits from that? Who benefits from my being miserable in my life because those choices were taken from me? It doesn't do anybody any good whatsoever.
I think it helps the Catholic Church quite a bit.
Well, perhaps.
And the no divorce thing, that surprised me. I did not know that there were still countries on this earth that where the Catholic Church is denying people the right to divorce.
Well, you know,
being in control of the government.
I have often said that I don't want gay marriage legal until we have gay divorce, but that might just be the bad relationships talking.
There was actually something kind of interesting coming out of the question of gay divorce recently. A state, I forget if it was Wyoming or Nebraska, it was a state that did not have any sort of same-sex marriage equivalent or anything like that, but they granted a gay divorce. I forget what, if you're listening and you know what state this is, or you can call in, email us, whatever, but they granted a divorce to a marriage that they wouldn't actually officiate.
Yeah, you know, I remember that, and it was tough because the couple could not divorce, like, legally until somebody, you know, kind of stepped in and said, okay, we have to figure out how to legislate or how to arrange this because we don't have gay marriage.
One thing that I would like to bring up that I don't think we mentioned, I'm pretty sure this is the case, the New York marriage laws, the gay marriage laws, do not actually have a residency requirement. So if you don't live in New York State, you can go to New York State, get hitched, and go back to where you live. I think most of the other gay marriage laws that are out there, you have to be living in that state for a certain amount of years. I don't know what it is. But yeah, so that actually is very interesting with the... I think it's called full faith and credit between states, you know, effectively this almost makes gay marriage legal everywhere.
Yeah. I know Massachusetts, you don't have to be a resident. A lot of people were traveling to Massachusetts. Here's an argument in favor of gay marriage actually that involves that. A state that has gay marriage legalized, people come, they stay in hotels, they spend their money, they buy dresses, rent halls, they pay for catering. All of that is economically positive. So people should really be in favor of gay marriage to help us get out of this slump we're in.
True enough.
So this is something I know that the gay rights movement and the atheist visibility movement get compared a lot, whether, yeah, you know, terms like coming out, things like that. What do you think these movements could learn from each other, and do you think a comparison is fair?
I know one thing that I read in the prior mentioned Greta Christina blog post was that the gay movement, especially like in the 70s, had, you know, firebrands. They had people who were, you know, demonstrating and breaking things and yelling and being very, you know, vocal. And they had more conciliatory people. And she said that, you know, the atheist movement needs both. And there's been criticizing back and forth between people who have different styles of communication. But she said that the LGBT movement did recognize in those early days you had to have good cops and bad cops. And I think we do need to pay attention to that.
Absolutely. I mean, our audience is diverse. And there are some people who respond to loud arguments and some people who will respond to logical and rational arguments. Now, on my YouTube channel, Bionic Dance, to which you should all be subscribed, I describe myself as a rabid and screaming atheist. For that very reason, I guess I am kind of, by nature, one of those firebrand types. I try to inject a lot of logic, reason, and evidence into my arguments, but at the same time, you know, I don't take any crap from people. I don't do a soft sell, you know? I don't sugarcoat it.
Right. And, you know, we as atheists, I think, spend far too much time criticizing each other for our delivery styles and not enough time just actually doing what we do best, you know?
I've noticed that there's this divide where somebody goes, well, that argument would never work on me. Well, that argument isn't aimed at you.
And the truth is, there are people out there who will make the argument that will work on you. I mean, I can recommend, just in the YouTube atheist scene alone, people who do pure science, almost with the delivery of a robot, to people who are yelling and screaming louder than I ever would. So, I mean, the argument that would work on you is out there somewhere, unless no argument will work on you because you're completely inflexible.
And that's the definition of close-minded. And I would also say faith. But again, I think, don't get me started on faith. That diversity of any movement is something that makes it stronger. And I think that the only thing we should ever exclude is outright violence.
Absolutely. Oh, sure.
So where do you think we are at? I know that clearly the gay rights movement has had several decades head start on the atheist movement. Where do you think we're at on that timescale?
Well, I think we are working on familiarity, and I think that will be the one thing that will really bring us into the mainstream is when people see that we are not baby-eating villains. You know, when people look at an atheist and go, this is not someone who's a danger, this is not someone who's excessively weird, you know, this is not someone who will go after my children or anything like that. We're just people, too. We just happen to have a different worldview. I think we are getting there, and This show is a step in the right direction. When there's an atheist sitcom, I think we're there.
Yeah, that is a lot of the how do we branch out into culture. And here's the other one, since you guys sort of have a foot in each world, what is the experience being LGBT in the atheist community and being an atheist in the LGBT community?
It's about the same. I can tell you that I'm not the only person that I know who is in both scenes. And for the most part, actually, I think we get more hate as LGBT than we do as atheists. I think we get more incredulity as atheists. I think we get a lot more, what? But as LGBT, we get more of the, you know, the ick factor coming up as rar.
Yeah, and you know, I think in general the atheist community tends to be very accepting of people who are different, whether it's a you know difference of background, whether it's gay or straight or trans or bi or anything, and so you know there are times though where you know you see an atheist will say something just horrendously bigoted, and you go, I didn't expect that from an atheist. And, you know, it does serve as a reminder that it is not a very unified movement.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing that unifies us is our lack of belief in a deity. I mean, I can name liberals, conservatives, gay, straight, whatever, every race imaginable in the atheist scene, and a lot of us do not agree.
Yeah, there's so many different people. And, you know, people tend to, I actually had someone tell me that that he wanted to join an atheist community, but he was a conservative and he didn't like, you know, all the liberals everywhere in atheism because they were, you know, they didn't agree with him or they bashed him or whatever. And, you know, I do think that there is a very, very high percentage of liberals in the atheist community.
Conservatism and religion do seem to go hand in hand. I mean, if you're right wing, you're pretty likely to be religious as well. And there's not a lot we can do about that. I do know an atheist YouTuber who is also a conservative, and maybe we don't give him as much crap as we could. I mean, most of it's good natured, you know. So we try to be as accepting of people of different political bends as anything else.
Do you think there might be a self-selection bias in that, though, that if a group starts out fairly liberal, it'll stay fairly liberal? And that, I mean, certainly in the conservative movement, there's a strong social conservative wing, which is the religious right wing. So I can understand how we would not feel necessarily welcomed by that movement because we're outright excluded. But do you think that somehow any group that tends to be more homogenous will stay that way over time?
Well, it's possible. I mean, that guy I talked to didn't want to join a local atheist group because he was conservative and there were too many liberals around and he didn't like the way that they talked about conservatives. And
was he a social conservative or just an economic one? Because we have plenty of economic conservatives.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, there's a pretty strong libertarian component to the atheist movement. And I'm not talking Republicans who say they're libertarian. I'm talking actual libertarians. But you know, I don't know.
Well, part of the problem, from my experience, is that social conservatism tends to come with xenophobia. Yeah. It tends to come with a fear of the unknown. It tends to come with a dislike of anything different, that conformity seems to be a virtue. Now, maybe there's some conservatives out there who are going, nah-uh, but, you know, that's been my experience in general.
Yeah. And if you are one of those conservatives who is maybe an atheist or you want to disagree with our findings, please call us. The number is 253-584-1480, if I've got it right.
Yeah, you do.
Yay!
And you are listening to Ask an Atheist. So that is a question. I mean, how do we become more diverse as a movement when it comes to educating? Of course, we've run into homophobic atheists. It's rare, and I think we're good at policing ourselves and jumping on the offender when it happens.
Yeah.
But how much education do you feel that the atheist movement needs about gay rights issues, and how much education does the gay rights movement need about atheists?
That's a good question.
It is a good question. I don't have any statistics on that one. So.
But, well, personal experience.
For the most part, I think everyone in each movement is pretty much simpatico with each other. I mean, honestly, most of the atheists I know are LGBT friendly. And I think it's actually more likely that the LGBTQ whatever community is going to be less accepting of atheists than the other way around. I mean, that's just my personal feeling.
Yeah, I have heard from people who have said that, you know, They experienced people in the LGBT community saying that, you know, they didn't really want to associate with atheists because atheists are seen badly, and, you know, they're still
sounds hypocritical.
It does, but, you know, or that they think that atheists are wrong, that, you know, maybe they do still have religion, and, you know, they don't like the way we atheists criticize religion.
Yeah, I think that's something that we've encountered a lot, that we are still a third rail, that while the gay rights movement has had a huge head start on sort of correcting misconceptions, we're just getting started on that. That's pretty much all the time we have for this week. We have a lot of way to go, both in the gay rights circles and with atheist visibility. I want to thank you for your time here today. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. My name is Mike Gillis, and joining me again this week, Deanna Joy Lyons and Kate Farr. Our call screener was Sam Mulvey, production assistant Rebecca Friedman. Our theme music was written by Chris Coleman. We're a production of NEDM Media. You can catch us online at askanatheist.tv.
And you can find me on YouTube under Bionic Dance, all one word.
Keeping you informed.